Previously on Good Sex, Bad Sex.
So I run to the toilet, and it's a trough. It's like a ceramic trough.
Yeah.
You know, old school trough. And there's a guy in the trough. There's people weeing in it. There's a guy in the trough, naked, wearing nothing but a scuba mask and a snorkel. And when everyone's trying to wee in the toilet, he keeps leaning into the stream with his snorkel. And I thought, well, when in Rome, right?
Yeah.
So I got as far away from him as I could. I did need to go to the loo. Yeah. And so I started winging the thing. And then he leaned over and went, whoa, and I thought, you know what? Screw it. So I just sort of really pelting right into the mask, trying to get some into the snorkel.
Oh, nice.
He was grinning and loving it. He was like, woohoo. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so we made eye contact and so it turns out he's famous.
Hello and welcome back to a special two-parter episode of Good Sex, Bad Sex.
Is it our first two-parter?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
I know. Well, Phil was so good. We just couldn't.
Oh, God.
We had to do more.
He's so good looking.
Isn't he?
I know. Have you touched his face?
No.
Not with the injunction.
Yeah.
No. That's not happening again.
It's a bit intimidating, though, isn't it?
Did you touch his face?
touched everything else.
We had amazing stories and in this episode. So a few teasers of virginity, groupies, and his advice on why you and I can't get laid. Listen in, everyone. Do you have lots of sex in your shows? I've worded that wrong. Do you speak about sex often in your shows?
No, I did that. The Nearly Gay show has moments of it because that event has got three. There's three intersecting stories that come through that event. So I've told that story in three different shows for different reasons.
Mm.
And it's long winded, so it's pointless to go into. But obviously it was a turning point to be more serious about it. It was a turning point in my life because up until that point, I actually I was raised in quite a devout born again Christian family. I was a virgin until I was 21, and I have had just long term relationships, 5 years, mm-hmm. and then the next person I met, next woman I met, I married. That was 5 years. And then I moved to Britain, and then the girl with the bell, that was a few years off and on. And then that happened. So at that point, I had the time to sit and think, you know, I've sort of missed out on a certain amount of sexuality.
Mm.
And only when you're faced with not having it do you realize, oh, maybe I should try to be a little more. I don't know if that's part of it. I'm looking back, thinking that made me go, well, you should maybe just try and be a little more adventurous. So then that leads me to other things.
Yeah. Other things.
Well, just like I'm not that interesting. I'm like sort of I believe in long-term, I think long-term monogamous sex is the most satisfying.
Did you?
I do, yeah.
Can we tell Phil our secret?
Have you guys had long-term monogamous sex?
Tell Phil the secret.
Yeah. It's your turn. I did the secret last
What's
time.
What's your secret?
Miranda and I host a podcast, Good Sex, Bad Sex. You're starring on it right now. Mm. And we've
it
had
is
this,
real.
Yeah, we've hosted this since February.
Yeah.
And neither of us gorgeous women have managed to have sex since we started this fucking
really?
Podcast.
Yeah, it's cursed us.
What do you mean? It's not. You mean people are going because they don't want to end up being a highlight of your show. I actually have because the minute that happens, you're going, you won't believe what happened to me last week. His name was Tony. He was a dancer. So I get in trouble for this all the time. In fact, the person that I'm presently with why would you want your, because I'm a comedian. If I wasn't a comedian, these would be a story I might tell you late night at a party or at best at a dinner, if it was part of a dinner party to tell a wicked story like that. But because I'm a comedian and I sort of work on true stories and basis of my new show, You're Wrong, which is touring.
And you're going to Soho Theatre, I'm
going to
Soho
Theatre,
the end of
November
27th
to December 1st.
Yeah.
The reason for telling true story, I find that if I use myself and my own life as the the clothes rung to hang my jokes on, then I'm not going to offend anyone because it's from my real life.
Yeah.
And because my real life does have these episodes, and I kind of mine my life for those episodes and thought, well, the ones I've said are obviously going to stick out if you're listening to this podcast because it's the theme of the podcast.
Exactly.
There are other stories that don't involve those things at all.
But do you really think that? Do you really think long-term monogamous sex is the best sex?
I can only speak from the experience of it's more satisfying, isn't it? When you know the person and you care about the person and yeah.
So did you not have a moment of sowing your wild oats? Like for me, because if I'd have been told that there is a possibility or living for a day with a possibility that your penis will not be working.
Yeah.
I'd be like, living my life like my penis is going to break.
When I finally got the okay, the thumbs up, that it was all okay.
Yeah.
Because they only know, so they ultrasound it and they only know so much. I was single.
Yeah.
But because I'd been celibate for all that time, then I had that one event.
Yeah.
Which lasted not more than a few minutes of like till that happened, and then another few months of it, and I was single, and I was cast in a musical called Taboo with Boy George, which is a big gay musical.
Yeah,
did I say big gay musical? That sounds horrible, isn't it? Big gay. At the time, that's how I described it, but it's a musical about Boy about Lee Bowery. Yeah. So I mean, it's it deals with those lifestyles in 80s pop culture.
Mm.
And also the other actors, I think there's only one other straight actor in the show, only one other straight male in the show. So it was all, gay men who are not all, but sometimes very prolific with their boyfriends. Is that the right word? Prolific? I mean, they're not shy about it. They're not shy about talking about it because it's just I think it's more, for some reason, I think it's probably because maybe you can like me, but it's because it's maybe it's a male thing. They didn't have an issue with having multiple partners. So being in that atmosphere, I just sort of went, well, right. I don't really like the idea of people going out with someone, being with you and lying to you and saying, I'm only seeing you and then seeing other people. So I think if you're going to have multiple partners, you have to tell them so that they know they have the option to go, I don't want to be with you. Mm. And I found that in my life, and I know if it's true for most people, if you can work the nerve, because if you really like someone, you don't want to tell them that in case they go, oh, I don't like the sound of that, and then they leave. But I've found that in the early days of the relationship, if you do tell them that you are seeing other people, most of the time it's the opposite happens, and they are more curious and try harder or make more of an effort to have a fun time when you are with them.
Yeah,
that's what I think, and I don't know if that's changed with the Tinder world, because I think that's what happens on. I'm not on Tinder. I don't do that kind of thing. But my friends
don't ever do it.
Why?
No,
why?
Don't do it yourself. It's
just
too lovely.
Swamp.
Why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
Have you never tried it?
No.
Oh no.
No.
Oh no.
Is it good?
No. February. 3 years.
Well, you're just not working it properly then.
You're
not working it.
Is there? I can ask both of you this. Is there a groupie scene on the comedy scene?
A groupie scene? Oh yeah, of course there is.
Really?
I mean, groupies are. This is something that's happened to me because I was in a comedy act for a while. There's three of us, and we were on Mad TV in the States, so we had like quite a lot of groupies. When you say groupies, you mean girls that just will do shag you, but that's not what comedy groupies are. Comedy groups are more like usually highly intelligent women who are so into comedy and they see you as a broken man, and they want to mother you, and they bring you things, and they bring you cupcakes.
I know, exactly. Thank you.
But they bring you things, and my experience is that a lot of the people that I knew who were, I don't think groupies is the right word because that sounds like as a sexual context, but people who are obsessed with comedy, the women that I've known who are obsessed with comedy, a lot of them go on to become successful women in comedy, and that includes most of the high powered agents in this country, some of the producers I know. I don't think she would like to be called a groupie, but the woman who was one of the bookers for the Just for Last Festival was the head of the Courtney Juice Picks fan club when she was a teenager. She remembers it. We were really nice to her, and you know, she worked the door for us, and she got all the
She just immersed herself in the world.
But I don't know if that's a groupie.
No. I'm being crass. Miranda asked me to ask that.
Yeah. I reckon it must. I think it must exist. And for instance, that, you know, the girl that I mentioned in the story. Worked at the comedy club.
Yeah.
But I mean, isn't that like, it's like an office, isn't it? I mean, I don't know anymore. I think the sands have shifted a bit on that. And I'm not sure how that would, I'm not sure how that's viewed anymore. I'm not of an age where, like, I don't know if that now there's a more fine, there's like a line, like a more bold line about how you conduct yourself in your place of work.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Whereas I think with comedy clubs and nightclubs and anything where it was a social atmosphere, those lines are blurred a bit because you're all there just to have fun, and people are adults, so they can do what they want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear about actors all the time. I mean, while we were looking at the papers, you know, the Sean Walsh. Sean Walsh story. I mean, I know Sean, and as far as I know, he's a decent, loving man. But it's a relationship thing. I would not want to comment on it. But in that world, you can only imagine a world of dancers, especially Strictly Come dancers.
So it's hot body next to you.
Well, but also you've got to spend a lot of time with, and they are dancers, so they're going to be fit and full of endorphins and
that
hot to trot.
As well, it's because it's a lot of eye contact, and it's it's acting in itself. So there's all that emotion coming out through the dance, and so that's why they have this Strictly curse, isn't it?
Well, we were watching Cloud Atlas, right? And there's a lovemaking scene, and where the actor's making love to the guy, and then it turns out that they were a couple after that film.
Mm.
And you're thinking, well, you know. If they're going to really indulge themselves in, they are only acting, but they're really going to indulge themselves as actors do in that scene, then they're going to spend all that time filming together, all that time being in love with one another, pretending to be in love with another. It's some hard to, those lines become blurred. I think it's the same for performance. If you work in a theater and if someone is working in the theater and takes a shine to you, it happens all the time. There was a couples in the last play that I did that were formed.
Really?
While we were in the play. And I mean, in fact, people they're all professionals. So within 3 weeks, they're going, right, okay, who's what's the goss?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And everyone's trying to keep it quiet because, you know, you don't want to be the...
Everybody's talking about Jamie?
No. don't know anything about it. Don't know anything about that.
Can I ask a non-sexy question?
Nope.
Oh, go on. And then I'll tell you about my most recent date.
Okay.
Because you'll all love that. Are you loving doing the acting? I know you've done loads and you've been so successful. Are you loving both? Does it feed your comedy? Is it a whole different baby?
I being in Everybody's Talking About Jamie was a fantastic experience for me in every way. Because I love acting, but I do also I really enjoy being on my tour. You're wrong, November 27th, December 1st. But I'm I love that. But I trained as an actor and want to be, you know, my goal in my life when I was young and still now would be, you know, I'd love to be performing in a major role at the RSC or at the Globe, even though when I talk to other actors, they go, the Globe, that's not Shakespeare. I mean, actors are so funny, like, oh, goodness, you know, I wouldn't want to do, you know, because they've all done it.
Yeah.
But I haven't, and I've always wanted to. And I think it's just as a moment to go, well, that's what I started out, I wanted to do from the moment, from about 12 years of age. So I kind of trust it'll happen, something. But everybody's talking about Jamie is the third or fourth West End show I've done, and Cuckoo's Nest and Taboo.
Amazing.
Is there a fourth one? Yeah. Make me up. There will be. but I don't know. I think you have to. I don't know how the business works. It's the same way, you guys. We don't know how relationships work. You take them. You take the good ones when you can get them.
yeah.
You know.
I'm
kind of in this thing where I've got friends who are in long term. I watched Daniel Sloss's Netflix show Jigsaw. Have you guys seen that?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Then you guys should see it for research because he brags in it about breaking relationships up for the right reason. For the right reason. For the reason being that you're sitting beside someone that you've actually realized doesn't actually fit in your jigsaw and they realize you don't fit in theirs and you're kind of getting on with it. You might have kids and you might be married, but you realize you can break up with them now and go through a year of hell and get your life back, or you can just have a horrible life and not be having a horrible relationship. and it's frightening to consider that thing. And I think he's quite bold. And then also being, like a cocky comic and being funny about it. He's going, last year in August, he broke up a relationship of 13 years with kids. And they both said, thank you so much.
Wow. Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think Phoebe's going to have a heart attack.
Why? Have you been married?
No. This podcast has upset me in so many ways.
No.
Okay.
Thank God.
Give us some sexy advice.
I don't know.
Come on,
Sexy advice. I'm not really good at it, and in the sense that I'm.
Do you matchmake?
I don't know. No, I don't. I do know a lot of people. I'm a little bit because I talk a lot, and not so much anymore. But when I was living in a big house, mixed houses, and we have a lot of parties, I would introduce people. Mm. And there have been people that have my closest friends, Kirsty Duty and Nick Duty, who's a comedian. Mm. They met because of me, because I invited Kirsty to a party. I shouldn't talk about other people's relationship, but I've invited other people to the parties and they've met other friends of mine and had relationships. But I wouldn't say that was me that does it. That's them that does it. It's chemistry, isn't it?
Yeah.
So here's my advice. Go out.
Yeah.
We're busy doing a podcast.
You're not going to meet someone sitting here.
I was going to say.
Me or Sam.
Yeah. Look at producers.
He's not even listening. Sam's still in shock over the broken penis.
He's on Facebook.
He's watching porn.
You broke penis.
He's never spoken in 31 shows.
What was that, Sam?
You broke your penis.
I did.
31 shows. That's hilarious.
It hurt. Oh. It hurts. It still hurts today.
Describe the pain.
It's like someone. Someone heating a really long knitting needle and sticking it through your perineum. Up into your stomach.
Oh!
It shot through.
Where did you just put your hand?
Like yeah.
Stick that on the website.
I've had a couple of doctors. I've one couple come up to me in Birmingham. The woman came up and went, was that because there's two injuries that can happen. There's one with the banjo string break, the little string breaks and then it bleeds a lot, but that's not it. This was like, and this woman came up and went, was it this one or this one? I said, no, it was the thing. She went, my husband, he was standing over going, I don't know. I did it to him she came over and he came over and went, hey mate. And I went, hello mate. I feel your pain. He went, yeah, I know exactly. I said, it's all right. He goes, yeah, it's all right. It was very terrifying at the time.
Do they put a little cast on it?
No.
Oh. No.
But it kind of straightens itself out.
Do you feel like you're part of the Broken Penis Survivors Club?
I don't know if there is one.
There is now.
I think so.
I get the odd doctor that comes up and goes, oh, I've dealt with that before. But it's not, rare. It's not rare, but it's rare. It's rare. Yeah. I'm not in all the time I've been telling the story, no one else has admitted it, but I don't know if you would.
Apart from that one
guy. I don't think a normal human being would be telling you the things that I'm telling you. This is content for your podcast, and you've asked the right guy.
Do you find that being a comedian, like all those little instances that you started, that you were telling us about, going to the fetish clubs, Mr. Trough Man and all that, do you find that you're just like, meh, I'll give it a go, just because you're feeling in the spirit of things? Or is it like, I'm a comedian, if nothing else, this is brilliant material?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was more innocent than that. I went along to the gay pride in Amsterdam because I was with a friend, and and just fancy going out, and I enjoy the party atmosphere in a gay club. And then that happened. Mm. I had a friend of mine when I went to Mass at Easter in Brixton. A friend of mine was performing, doing a mind reading, because they have a big cabaret space, and he was doing a mind reading thing with, and his friend Harriet Bowden invited me to go along. And there was, I mean, there's a couple of crazy stories from that. And then, so those, I don't actually seek it out, no. And I think maybe that comes across in the storytelling, is that I think the audience, if they just thought I was some kind of, I don't believe there's that any of that's perverted, but if they thought I was a man of looser morals, I don't think they would be as impressed. I think it's because it comes from, like, I was raised in this really devout, loving, warm Christian family, and they still are, and sort of had a late development by being a virgin until I was 21. And so I was an adult, and I was so kind of, and also, and it wasn't because I didn't want to, it's just because I actually believed it was the right thing to do to wait.
Yeah.
So I can understand other people that do that and think that way, and I don't see them as being nerds or weirdos. I think them being maybe that is an intelligent choice. And then these other things, just because I'm a comedian, I like going out, and I've got a lot of racy friends.
What made you think it, saving your virginity wasn't the right thing to do? Why did you, at 21, so did you decide to keep it till 21 until you were married?
I guess I thought by that point it had built up to being something that was so important. Well, it was my belief that it was important for one reason. And then I realized, well, you know, you get to a point where you're a teenager where you just go, I wasn't drinking or smoking or doing any of that stuff. And all the kids would go on parties, and that's where people lose their virginity. You don't think he's fun about. And I never, you know, had that experience. I had a girlfriend who, you know, was like the school, like the brainer in the school, who was also a bit of a nerd. Then I went to acting school, which then I started, you know, drinking and being a bit more worldly is what it's felt like. But I never got into that. I never met anyone. And then I met the first girl that I fell for, who was wonderful, you know. And then the second woman I ever slept with, I had a 5-year long relationship with.
With a little bell.
With a little bell.
No,
that wasn't a little bell.
No.
That wasn't a little bell. The little bell. Just so you know, to clarify, that sounds weird. The little bell was just it was a joke.
No,
you can't backtrack.
I get in trouble. I get in trouble for saying and doing the wrong thing a lot, like what I think my little funny joke. And so, but I kept it there, and then also it kind of plagued me because the reason that I'd done all that, getting sober and doing that, is because we broke up. It was my fault. She broke up with me, but I was being a little bit unruly I was still suffering from breaking up with my wife.
Yeah.
So I was being a little bit like, just, wow, I couldn't, it was hard to, it was how I was being difficult. So that was the kind of thing that I was doing to try and go, hey, look, this is kind of fun. And she was going, you're weirdo. That's just weird. And then making it worse by ha ha ha, ring ring, ring it with my toe just for a laugh.
Yeah.
Not funny.
Broke your penis.
It is funny. It depends how you look at it.
Yeah.
It depends how you look at it. But I kept on the bed, and then it plagued me because I thought, well, it reminded me of how horrible I had been.
It's your own little bell end reminder.
Yay.
Oh,
there you go.
You
should have your own show.
I'm BB Lynch.
And I'm Miranda Kay.
And Good Sex, Bad Sex, our podcast, Miranda, on metro.co.uk, was produced by, you say his name, so I'm not talking to him.
It was Mr. Sam Bonham, Esquire.
Join us next week. Review us, rate us.
Do all the stuff to
all
us.
All the stuff to us.
That no one else is doing.
Seriously. I've got a bed sore, I don't know how. And we'll see you then.